Well, hello there, and welcome to episode 62 of the Rock Podcast. For those about to pod, we salute you. In this episode, there's rock news, there's latest releases in New Rock on the Block. We've reached the letter O in the A to Z of rock. Good luck us, Bri.
Indeed.
There's hidden gems and many more of your favourite features. So without further ado, here he is. He's dressed in green to commemorate St. Patrick's Day at the weekend. Here's Brian.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello. Hello, sir. Belated happy St. Patrick's Day, which was at the weekend.
It was indeed.
You went out, I guess, and drank your weight in Guinness, I presume, as you would normally do.
No, I didn't, Matthew. I had a quiet, tranquil day on Sunday, buying birthday present for my mum and my aunt, watching lots and lots of people in Edinburgh wearing plastic green and white hats. It looked like Edinburgh had turned into like Blackpool, the little plastic hats you used to have, the bowler hats with like Kiss Me Quick on it. Well, they were all green and various sort of bobble hats thingies that people were wearing. It was it just felt like I was home.
Oh yeah, sounds like it. Normal Saturday night in Limavady.
Exactly. We all drink Guinness, which is dyed green.
Yes, indeed.
But I will take your St. Patrick's greetings well, mate. Thank you.
Yeah, well, you're very welcome. Very welcome. So, news-wise, what has caught your eye, Brian?
Well, first we have to start, Matt, with what we talked about in the last episode. A little bit of continuity.
Yep.
I got my Bohemians top.
I can see it. A Thin Lizzy Bohemian FC football shirt. It looks pretty good, actually. Yeah,
it is. I'll wear it at Stone Dead.
Yeah, please do. Put a picture of yourself on wearing it on the Facebook page, please, so everyone can see it.
Yes.
Brian he's got this normal picture of Princess Diana behind him, and he's got various guitars that have been gathering dust for a while, sitting around next to him. And he looks great. I do like that top. I do. It is good. What colour is it? It looks kind of like yellowy.
It's white. Yeah,
cream.
It's kind of a creamy white.
Very good. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you going to become a Bohemian FC supporter now, along with your various other teams that you put? Frontiers FC is your favourite team, isn't it?
Do you know what? If Frontiers Records brought out a football shirt, I would buy it, wouldn't I?
Of course you would.
Anyway,
how did
we digress and get on to Frontiers Records, Matt, for this another episode?
So early onto Frontiers Records.
Yeah, pound in the pot.
Exactly. I'd talk about continuity, though. Remember last time we were talking about Jon Bon Jovi and his problem with his vocal cords,
an yes.
atrophied vocal cord, which has been replaced by a plastic vocal cord.
Mm.
I suppose these days, with technology, medical technology as it is, that's probably nothing to be too concerned about. Mm. But however, he's back on form. He's got a new single out called Legendary from the new Bon Jovi album, which is, I don't know when it's coming out, it's called Forever. It's pretty good. We'll put that on the playlist if it's available. But yeah, sounding good, Legendary. So I'm pleased. I am pleased because I'm a kind of a Bon Jovi fan from the 80s. And yeah, it's good to see him kind of recovering, because that period when he was struggling was, it was tough for him and for those who had to listen. But it's nice to see that he's back. So yeah, that song, Legendary. What did you think? Did you ever listen?
You sent it to me whenever you sent a link to me of it. And I was thinking, how's this going to go? And it's great. It's modern day Bon Jovi. If you know, when we talk about It's My Life and Have a Nice Day, it's in that, big shouty choruses. So it's Bon Jovi back in form. And his voice sounds relatively strong, but his band, it's a good tune. I'll be very interested to hear what the rest of the album is like. I think a lot of the fans, with all of the talking about, you know, everybody being on good terms with Richie, and Richie being quite open about, hey, you know what, let's do something in 2024 for the, you know, for getting back with the band and the upcoming, you know, series, docu-series on Disney. I was surprised that Richie hasn't featured on it at all, and there has been no contact as yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'd be good. And you know, it's been 2 years. You know, I think John's told us all about the surgery that he's had, and I think he's backed it up by saying, you know, I'm not going to go out playing unless I'm on top form. So it might be one of these cases where Bon Jovi may not do massive touring as they've always done and just do one-off shows and maybe residencies. Yeah. And yeah.
Well, yeah, residencies. They seem to be very popular now, don't they?
Yeah.
Especially in Vegas. Popular and lucrative. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a Vegas residency next year. Good shout, actually. I can't see them doing, you know, Steel House or, you know, Made of Stone. But I can see him doing a Vegas residency. So we shall see. Exactly. We shall see. In other news, there's going to be a Bon Scott film. So 44 years after the sad passing of Bon Scott in 1980, there's now talk about a movie about Bon Scott's early life. Which could be interesting. It's very much in its kind of almost embryonic stages at the moment. It's going to be called The Kid from Harvest Road. And it's going to feature from when he moved to Western Australia in 1956, the age of 10, from Kirriemuir in Scotland, that he was where he was born. Uh-huh. Famously, where there's that statue there now. So is that far from you, Kirriemuir?
I've got some friends who live in Kirriemuir. I've been up to the statue. Yeah, it's maybe about, I'd probably say it's about just over an hour from Edinburgh, north of Edinburgh.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so it's good. This film is currently in development in Australia, and production expected to start in early 2025. But The lead actor has already been announced, a guy called Lee Tiger Haley, or Halley. Mm-hmm. I had this problem last time, didn't I, with that Daily Mount Park in Dublin. But anyway, Lee Tiger Haley, good-looking boy. I don't know whether he's going to kind of transform into Bon Scott, but who knows? He said Bon Jovi then, transform into Bon Scott. But that'd be interesting, wouldn't it? We'd watch that. Keep an eye out for that, shall we?
Yeah, but AC/DC are one of those bands, Matt, that were actually, there hasn't been, in my view, correct me if I'm wrong, there hasn't been a history of AC/DC docu-series. You know, even you know, the classic albums series, there hasn't even been one on Back in Black.
No,
AC/DC are so secretive about what they do, and you know, for one of the, you know, with obviously there's so much interest in AC/DC, you know, with all of the ticket sales for their European tour and Power Trip, etc. It's quite interesting that the first time we see something coming out about AC/DC, it's a film about Bon. And we've got no other reference point around the rest of the band. It's, yeah, very interesting.
It's true.
Quite secretive. It's true.
However, Brian Johnson is very happy to be in the public eye. He's just announced he's going to do a TV series with Mark Knopfler.
Yes.
A six-part TV series. So he's kind of the antithesis of it, really, isn't he? He likes to be out there. He's carved out this TV sort of career for himself. He did that. He's written books and everything. Yeah. Obviously, famously, his autobiography was out a couple of years ago, which was a good read. So yeah, he's doing a 6-part documentary series with his friend Mark Knopfler from Dire Straits. In case people don't know who Mark Knopfler is.
Well, I watched that series where Brian was on the road. It was like Brian Johnson on the road, and he. you know, he met up with Joe Walsh and Robert Plant and Roger Daltrey. And I have to say, you know, they're you know, big frontmen of big rock bands, and he met with Lars, and they're talking about it. But he met Mark in Colour Coats in Newcastle, and they sat in a tea room, and you know, Mark's, you know, tinkering on a little acoustic guitar, and he's not really interested about really talking about, you know, the heady days of Dire Straits when they were you know, selling shed loads of Brothers in Arms. And the pair of them just, you could tell, they just wanted to talk about football and living in the Northeast. It was very, they clicked as a, just the two of them just chatting and stuff. So I'm not surprised that they've decided to do something together. It'll be really interesting because Mark Knopfler is very, very quiet. You know, he's very, you know, he guards his private life very, you know, very well, and Brian Johnson's just, well, hey man, you know,
yeah,
smoke dabs drink beer.
Absolutely. Well, they got an eclectic mix of people coming on it. Tom Jones is on it. Carlos Santana, Nile Rodgers, Cindy Lauper, Emmylou Harris, and Sam Fender. Remember Sam Fender?
Yes.
That gig at St James's Park that we talked about. Yeah. Anyway, we shall see. But in other Mark Knopfler news. What's going on with him and this re-recording?
The last on the, I think it was the last show when we talked about Mark selling off his guitar collection for
£8 million, I think.
Yeah. And I didn't get a chance to buy a plectrum.
No.
Or even a guitar string. But Mark and quite a lot of the proceeds from the guitar sale was going to Teenage Cancer Trust. So Mark has assembled 60 musicians, man. I had to write this down. So what he's decided to do is he's
that's more than has been in Whitesnake. That's amazing.
Or the current members of Lynyrd Skynyrd on stage.
That's right. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah. So this is just some of the music. So what Mark's decided to do is he's re-recording the theme from the movie Local Hero, which is it's a cult classic British movie. If you haven't seen Local Hero, go and watch it. It's just an amazing film. But the theme of the film is called Going Home, it's actually the music that Newcastle United players come out on the pitch to. That's their you know, they go out on it. So it's synonymous with the Northeast. So Mark has re-recorded it, and I'm not surprised it's rocking in at about 9.5 minutes, the version of it, Matt, because he has gathered Alex Lifeson, Steve Lukather, Joe Walsh, Derek Trucks, Joe Satriani, Steve Vai, John McLaughlin, Brian May and Tony Iommi, Sam Fender, as you just mentioned, Eric Clapton, Joe Bonamassa, Audley Freed was mentioned, the guitarist who I love, Hank Marvin / those are some of the guitarists. And poignantly, it is the last recordings of Jeff Beck. So Jeff Beck. So if you listen to Going Home, the first melodic tune is Jeff playing it. And if you're a fan of Jeff Beck and you know his playing, it's amazing. Jeff Beck's playing. And then the rhythm section's not too shabby either. You've got Ringo Starr and his son Zach Starkey with Sting on bass, and the keys are being played by Jonathan Cain from Journey and Paul Carrick. And all of the funds and proceeds from the sale download of the single is going to Teenage Cancer Trust in the UK. And then the American equivalent, Teen Cancer America. So Mark Knopfler, good on you.
Yes, indeed. Yes, well said. And boys and girls, get out there, download it. do what you need to do, because that sounds amazing. Nine minutes of all those amazing players for the cost of a download, as you say, you're helping out two brilliant cancer charities.
And I was in HMV in Edinburgh today, and you can buy I think there's a special edition 12-inch single of it, which is being pulled together, but the artwork's been done by Peter Blake, who obviously famously did Sergeant Pepper. So Peter Blake's done that, and you know, if you're buying the 12-inch single, 50% of the proceeds from the 12-inch single goes to the four I mentioned charities. So yeah,
brilliant.
Go out and buy it.
Brilliant. I'm actually going on Amazon now and see if I can get it. Right, moving on. That's very good. This one caught my eye because we were talking last time about Foreigner, and hopefully they'll be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Is it next month or May? I can't remember when it actually takes place.
It's, yeah.
Whatever, this year, sometime. And Lou Gramm, who was the singer in the kind of Halcyon era in the 70s, left 20 odd years ago, finished with Foreigner 2003, incredibly. But still kind of active since then. But he's decided to retire from music at the end of this year. I think he's in his 70s now, so you can somewhat understand his retirement. Which is fine. When I heard it, I thought, well, that'd be a nice way of ending his career if they did indeed get a Foreigner, that is, get inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Say what you like about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but it's a nice accolade all the same. And there is talk of him, and I think it's nailed on as being definitely going to happen, that he will sing with Foreigner and Kelly Hansen, and hopefully Mick Jones will participate and so on. So, yeah, Lou Gramm, we wish you well. But I mean, just we talked about Lou Gramm before as one of those voices of AOR with Steve Perry. You know, that those guys are just, you know, exemplary in terms of their quality of singing and the notes they can hit. Yeah. I remember famously Kelly Hansen, the current singer of Foreigner, saying that when he sees the set list, the song that he doesn't look forward to, ironically, is Jukebox Hero, because the notes, you know, it goes through the gears in that song. And Lou Gramm did it, you know, effortlessly. Uh-huh. But Kelly Hansen, great singer he is, still kind of doesn't look particularly forward to that song. But we wish Lou Gramm well. I mean, it'd be great if we see Kelly Hansen and Lou Gramm and various other Foreigner luminaries and previous members and so on stage for the for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to have seen Lou live though, Matt. You know, when you hold out hope for one of your favourite singers, you know, possibly coming over for a festival or whatever. You know, could he be the headline? Could he be our surprise headliner for Stone Dead? Here we are in March. It's still not announced.
I know. I'm still hoping for Slayer, as discussed last time. I would love to see Slayer. Who knows?
Well,
got anything else, Brian?
Yeah, I have a couple of things. And it's interesting that we were talking about the ever secretive AC/DC, who tell us nothing. Another band who are equally as secretive, and there's being secretive, and then there's being lazy, and then there's just being we don't hear anything at all. And this is a book which we will review and later this year. Alex Van Halen has announced that he will be releasing his autobiography, which is entitled Brothers. It's going to be coming out in October of 2024, and effectively it's basically his memoir of life with Eddie, and it's his tribute to his beloved brother and bandmate. You know, we've talked in the show probably over the last, you know, since last 3 years since Eddie's passing. You know, Wolfgang David Lee Roth, Sammy Hagar. Obviously, Sammy's going out on tour this year, playing a lot of Van Halen material. But Alex hasn't said anything. You know, he's not. And so it'll be very interesting to see what Alex's account is of the Van Halen. So I'm quite surprised, actually, how knowing how secretive and how quiet the Van Halen camp is usually on social media, that Alex will be bringing his book out in October. So I'm really excited about that, to hear his stories.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's something to look forward to, isn't it? That's your Christmas present sorted out, Brian. So finally, some sad news. Couple of music stars left us recently. Carl Wallinger from World Party and the Waterboys.
Yeah.
Sadly passed away recently, and very recently, as in last weekend, Steve Harley from Steve Harley and Cockney Rebel sadly passed away at the age of 73. So, sad news. And Carl Wallinger, only 66.
Yeah.
And Steve Harley, 73. You were quite a fan of World Party.
I liked World Party. Right. Yeah, World Party. I came to World Party in the early 90s, whenever I was a subscriber to, alongside, you know, buying classic rock and Kerrang, I subscribed monthly to Q magazine. And Q,
oh, yeah, of course.
And Q magazine started out with giving you, you know, like they gave you like a little compilation cassette, and then they moved on to like free, you know, freebie CDs and stuff. And I remember one of the first compilation cassettes I received from Q magazine had the track Way Down Now from World Party on it, and it just sounded so Beatles, and just he's such a, his songwriting is very, very analog songwriting, but sadly missed. And you know, Guy Chambers was in World Party, and famously, Carl wrote "She's the One," which was made famous by Robbie Williams. But he wrote so many, you know, is it like today, and Put the Message in the Box. So if I was to check a to anybody, go and check out their album Goodbye Jumbo, because that's probably it's great. And Steve Harley as well, you know, probably not my era, Matt. You know, I obviously, we know Make Me Smile, but beyond that, for me, I don't really know much about Steve Harley.
Well, I remember Steve Harley very well from the early 70s. Songs like Judy Teen and Mr. Soft, and as you say, Come Up and See Me, Make Me Smile, or Make Me Smile, Come Up and See Me, whichever way you want to look at it, which is a classic. I mean, just brilliant, brilliant songwriting. Real shame. He'd been suffering from cancer for a while. So it was one of those where, you know, obviously cancer got him in the end, which is always incredibly sad. So condolences to Carl Wallinger's family, and of course Steve Harley's friends and family too, of course.
Yeah.
So it's new Rock on the Block time, Brian.
Tis needs.
Now, we enjoyed this one. Sometimes when we listen to these albums, I was thinking about this, sometimes we listen to them and I think, great, I'm never going to listen to that again. But in the case of these albums this episode, I will be listening to them again. In fact, I thought they were great. But let's start with Invincible Shield by Judas Priest, shall we, Brian?
I've now got it in my head, Matt. A moniker for you. So, Matt, is the album on Roger's repeat?
Yeah, indeed. Well, I say what these are. Some of these are going to be amazing. Invisible Shield, which is the new album by Judas Priest, their 19th studio album. We've talked many times about their long and illustrious career, been going since late 60s, early 70s. What did you think of this, Brian?
Well, Matthew.
Yes.
Well, what we will say is congratulations to Judas Priest, because it is their highest ever charted album ever. in the UK album charts. It charted at number two in the charts, beating their previous highest charting position, which was for which album, Matthew?
That was British Steel back in 1980, which came out the same day as the first Iron Maiden album.
Did it really?
Yeah. Indeed, yeah. Ah. I bought them both on the same day they came out. But yes, British Steel in 1980. I think it got to number four, didn't it?
It did and indeed.
Where's this got to? Number one, two?
Number two.
Ah, that's right.
It was probably held off by the Barbie soundtrack or John Squire and Liam Gallagher, probably. But anyway, on to Judas Priest. Mm. Matthew, the first three tracks on this album, Panic Attack, Serpent and the King, Invincible Shield. I was listening to that, and I know you're going to go and see them quite soon.
Yes.
I was listening to it, and I just thought, number one, what high range Rob is still singing in.
Amazing.
You know, and he's harmonizing with himself, so he's singing like a low register, and then he's harmonizing with himself. It sounds like he's sucking helium at some points. It's just so high. So the three opening tracks in the album, it just sets off at such a cracking pace. Probably reminded me of that Painkiller era.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just very energetic. The standout tracks for me, it's where the track for me, which is the track of the album. It's a track called "Devil in Disguise." Please put it on the playlist.
Oh yeah,
it's a great tempo, great riffs, and Rob singing in that mid range, like that. He's in that, you know, great rock gravel, but in the bridges, I'm hearing lots of Thin Lizzy guitar interplay, and on that particular track, it's actually got a very Celtic overtones on the track and Devil in Disguise. I thought I was just amazing. Gates of Hell, again, the dual guitars. I was listening to the album and I'm going, oh my goodness, you can hear the influence of Metallica. Oh, and there's some Euro metal where you can hear Scorpions. And then I have to sort of give myself a shake and go, actually, Judas Priest influenced Metallica and Judas Priest influenced the Scorpions as well too. It was it never let up, Matt. It's an hour and 3 minutes, and I I missed going to see Judas Priest on this tour, and I have to say, you know, even at the back end of the album, you know, Giants in the Sky, the changes in the tempo just even went sort of Sabbath-y, you know, quite, I'm not a massive Judas Priest fan, as you know, but I was quite astounded how good it was. and the best way I can say is, Richie Faulkner kept all of his best riffs for this album and didn't put them on the Elegant Weapons album.
It's true, actually, isn't it?
That's where I am. Album.
It is a great album. One of their best, I think. As you say, consistent, and it just doesn't let up throughout. It's got a little bit of light and shade. Crown of Horns is the token kind of, you know, mid-tempo song. But, God is My Witness is a killer song. Trial by Fire, Invisible Shield and Panic Attack, which has got that kind of nice Priest-style intro, which of course is kicking off the live gigs around the UK at the moment.
Yeah.
So if you're going to see them, you're in for a treat. It's a very, very strong album. As you say, Rob Halford's voice, it's just, and the production from Andy Sneap.
Fabulous.
Who doesn't play on the album, Glenn Tipson and Richie Faulkner play.
Oh, really? Oh, I thought Andy would have played.
No, he does everything else, mixing and engineering and so on. But and of course he's the touring guitarist. Glenn Tipton not doing all of the shows as it were, or all of the show comes on for the encores. It's classic Priest. It's heavy metal. It's brilliantly produced. Deservedly a high placing in the charts. Go out and buy it. It's a great album. You won't be disappointed. Invincible Shield by the Mighty Judas Priest. How about that?
Yeah, trademarked. The Mighty Judas Priest.
Indeed. So that brings us up from metal to prog.
Yes.
With the new album by a band you like called Big Big Train.
Yes, I'm a big fan.
We touched upon them some time ago, actually, briefly, when we talked about their drummer going over to Nick DeVirgilio, working with Mr. Big. And this album is called The Likes of Us. Why isn't it just over an hour? I mean, you're a big prog fan. I'm not particularly. I enjoyed this. It's very... I'm just going to briefly give my two cents worth, as it were. It's a good album. It's got some standout songs on it. It's got some magnificent playing on it. I really like the song Oblivion, which is, I think, second track in.
Yeah.
And it's almost classic prog. As we were talking about it before we came on, and it's got that. It's the instruments used are very. They sound very, you know, 80s. There's a mellotron in there, for example, which I think is very kind of Yes, very sort of almost. It reminded me a little bit at times of Bells of Berlin by Lone Star. There's that kind of sort of trumpeting synthesizer sound throughout. There's pianos, there's horns, there's a vibraphone, whatever that is, played by Nick DeVirgilio. There's 12 string. There's just about every instrument you could think of is on this album. And in places, if I'm honest, it was a little bit sort of prog for prog's sake. I mean, it was, you know, there was time changes and there was random drum signatures and time signatures and so on. But all in all, I think it's worth a listen. Big, big train, Likes of Us. Well, of course, you must have loved it, Brian.
I absolutely did. Yeah, yeah. The lead off track, the lead single, as you say, which is Oblivion, it'll make our Brian's Bangers playlist for 2024. I had that song on when the album came out. I had that on a repeat. And Big Big Train have come. They've surprised quite a lot of people because they're essentially Big Big Train were a studio project band, and they started. They were founded in 1993, and their first live shows were in 2015, and you know, so it was like it was a project, and as you say, it's prog alumni join them from time to time, but they lost their lead singer in 2021, David Longdon, so a lot of people have thought, well, Big Big Train might have just packed up and all of the band do other projects, but their new singer, Alberto Bravin, he's just coming in and it's a lot more rockier. It's not as ethereal as it is, as previous albums have been. But as you say, Matt, it's lush, wonderful orchestration. You know, the opening, it's a 9-track album, which is an hour and 13 minutes. So there's a track on the album, which is Beneath the Masts, which is 17 minutes long. And it's got a violin and a guitar solo. But if you like your Sunday morning prog and you want to listen to something, which is in that kind of melodic Pink Floyd, just for music to just wash over you, Big Big Train's the album, The Likes of Us, is worth a listen. The two standout tracks for me are, as I say, are Oblivion, and then there's a great track near the back end of the album, which is called Love Is the Light, which is a really nice orchestrated song with a wonderful guitar solo from David Foster. So yes, a very, very good album. If you like your light melodic prog, which I do, so it ticked a lot of boxes for me, Matthew.
Yes, I can imagine. Yes, which is the same I could say for Bruce Dickinson's album, which is called The Mandrake Project, did the same for me. I loved it. From start to finish, it's his first album since 2005. Obviously, he's got his day job, the singer of Iron Maiden.
Mm-hmm.
But he's brought this album out, and it is far removed from Iron Maiden. I can tell you, it's got some epics on it. It weighs in at 58 minutes. It's got 10 tracks, so it's kind of a Maiden style in terms of the length of songs. I thought it was quite. It's a great songs, and it's got Bruce Dickinson's voice all over it, of course, and he's in fine form. I thought it was very cinematic at times. The sort of production and the musicality, I found it sort of almost gothic rock, not goth as in sort of Sisters of Mercy, but it's got a kind of a dark, damp sort of undertone to it. Songs like Afterglow, Ragnarok, Many Doors to Hell, Rain on the Graves. It's quite dark.
Mm.
It's almost like an album in black and white, as it were. You know, it's got that kind of real kind of gothic feel to it. But it's great. My favourite song's on it, and it's got an absolute epic at the end called Sonata Immortal Beloved, which is, talk about cinematic, I mean, it's an amazing song. Eternity Has Failed is a re-recording of the Iron Maiden song, which is... been reimagined.
Really? I didn't know that.
Which I think is on Final Frontier. I could be wrong.
Okay.
We'll put both side by side on the old playlist, and you can see what you think. But it's great. I hope it doesn't leave it 20 years to do another solo album. But this was it's a good album. Check it out. What did you think, Brian? I think you quite liked it, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, it's as you say. He's detuned it, and when you listen to the album, you know the first couple of tracks, you know the afterglow of Ragnarok, Many Doors. When I got about three or four tracks into it, I'm going, this is Bruce Dickinson, but I'm not getting any. This could have been on Peace of Mind, or this could have been. There was no sense of it. Feeling Iron Maiden in any way. As you say, there's acoustic guitars all over it. There's keyboards. For me, the standout track on the album by a mile is Resurrection Men. I love that track. You've got Sabbath, you've got, you know, there's Fingers in the Wounds. You've got, you know, string arrangements. Some of the string arrangements are reminiscent of Led Zeppelin, but with an electronic. You know, it's as you say. There's kind of like that gothic Nine Inch Nails. It's not like sumptuous. It's like keyboard stringsy, but then there's electronic stuff on it as well. It's very. It keeps you interested the whole way through. And there was times whenever Bruce's voice. When I closed my eyes, I was hearing Ian Gillan in some of his phrasing, and I know he's a massive Gillan fan. And then there was times where his voice reminded me of Graham Bonnet, and it was Graham Bonnet in the era of Michael Schenker. You know, I was hearing you know the Assault Attack album, which is one of my favorite MSG albums, and I could just hear that kind of Germanic power metal in the arrangements of it. And the biggest compliment I can give Bruce when I was listening to the album, he just sings like his life depends on it, Matt. You know, whenever you're hearing, like, particularly Eternity Has Failed, when he's hitting some of those notes, it's as if, you know, he's sung the song for 20 times that night. And it's like he's just given his last performance of it, and he's just shredding his voice. I just thought his vocal performance was great. And I think it's an album that I must confess, I had to listen to it a couple of times because it was a bit too wide for me. It was quite, I was just expecting formulaic Iron Maiden off cuts. And this album is not that at all. It's him and Roy Z have just pulled something together, which is just very, very good.
Yeah.
Very
absolutely.
Good. Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
So, touring. Yeah. So if he's is he coming to the UK doing one show in London?
No, I think he's doing a decent tour. He's playing London, I know that, but he's playing more than one show in London. You'll be pleased to hear. So the Mandrake Project by Bruce Dickinson. Check it out, boys and girls. So Brian, it's book club of rock time.
Yay!
We've both been into the library. We both borrowed the same book, which is a bit strange, a bit coincidental. So we've also got two copies of this in the library, which is nice. You find that sometimes, don't you? You know, you buy it and then you think, oh, I might buy that, and you find it, you've already got it. Anyway, this is a fascinating book by, it's by Paul Stanley. Paul Stanley from Kiss, one of the founding members from Kiss. It's called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. It's a few years old now. But it's a fascinating book. Paul Stanley is very honest in this book, and he's when he was young, he had some issues to deal with. He's only got one ear, and he's deaf in that ear.
Yeah, I never knew that before reading the book.
No, I think I did, because he famously kind of covered things up. He's had plastic surgery now to address certainly the cosmetic side of things. Mm-hmm. But so it deals with the issues that he faced when he was at school because of this issue with his ear. And essentially his path through New York growing up, obviously discovering music like a lot of people did in the 60s with the sort of classic kind of influences. He was very influenced by more sort of Motown, R&B and soul music.
Yeah.
As well as, you know, bands like Jefferson Airplane and MC5 and Led Zepp, of course, and so on. It's a fascinating book. It's really worth a read. You don't have to be a Kiss fan. It helps because obviously charts the story of Kiss from literally him and Gene Simmons, or Gene Klein, as he was originally known. Mm. He and Gene Simmons forming Kiss, recruiting Ace Frehley, recruiting Peter Criss as the drummer. Various issues with those two, the influence of drugs and alcohol, the money they made, the money they lost, the women, the gigs, the shows, it's got everything. It's a fascinating read. It's very honest. And it's well worth checking out. You've read it as well, Bri, I believe. It's your one book you've read this year.
No, I've read the Geezer Butler book as well.
Oh, that's right. Well done.
I think you've nailed it, Matt. Paul Stanley writes very honestly. Even his childhood and, you know, his upbringing and writing songs at an early age, his encounters with ladies, and he's very open about that.
That was his main hobby, I think. but he was in Kiss.
Yeah. the beginnings of Wicked Lester. But I think he always, you know, I can remember when he was flunking, when you read the chapters where he's flunking high school and, and the teacher's saying, you know, what are you going to do with your life, Stanley? And he goes, I'm going to be a rock star. But what's good about it is, you know, he didn't go on to X Factor and become a singer and it become overnight. The book is, you know, he's got a fair old memory on him when he's talking about the deals that they were doing, the parties that they were playing in New York, you know, constantly, you know, them even in rehearsals, you know, they were living in the rehearsal units, and, you know, they were, you know, members were coming and going in Wicked Lester, and if you weren't showing up to rehearsals or you weren't committed to the cause, you got cut from the band. So, you know, Paul Stanley was very, very focused, and he knew what he wanted to do. But as you say, very, very honest about his relationships with Gene and the other members of Kiss. I went into the book sort of not really knowing that much about Kiss and not knowing much about Paul Stanley. And you walk away from, I'm not finished it yet. But so far, I just like the honesty of the man, and he's honest about his own feelings as a man, but he's equally quite happy to call out when Gene wasn't holding up his end of the bargain in the kiss thing. But he dealt with it, and he's very open about it. Yeah, as you say, you don't have to be a fan of Kiss to appreciate this autobiography. Yeah, good.
Absolutely. And if you are interested, in the first, I think it's the first few pages, he basically gives you a guide on how to put your makeup on. So if you want to go to a fancy dress party or a festival as Paul Stanley, read the first couple of pages, and it tells you exactly how to put together the star child makeup. Uh-huh. Fascinating stuff. Yes. So, Paul Stanley, Face the Music, A Life Exposed. Check it out. It's a great read.
Yes. Oh, Matthew.
Oh no. Oh my goodness.
Oh, sometimes a letter says more. We have reached that time in the A to Z of rock, Matthew, where we are at the letter O.
Yes.
Which we have had some letters which have been a shallow pool to swim in.
Yes.
This one is a trickle in a cup.
This is a puddle, really, isn't it? No, it's not too bad. Not too bad. Let's start with the obvious. The great, the double O, Ozzy Osbourne. John Michael Ozzy Osbourne.
Yes.
I mean, iconic. The singer of Black Sabbath, singer in his own right as a solo performer. I mean, still going strong, relatively. I mean, he's had his issues, ailments and so on. Ozzy Osbourne, what a legacy. Black Sabbath, solo career. Fantastic, eh?
Yes, and to have when you think of the career that he had with Sabbath, and then to go on, particularly with the first two albums, in terms of Blizzard of Oz and Diary of a Madman with Randy Rhoads, and then he was one of those bands that, through the 80s with Shot in the Dark, he had MTV commercial success. He seemed to ride out the wave of grunge and was able, had Ozfest and, Pantera. And everybody just seemed to want to, everybody loves Ozzy. Somebody who's just been able to, well over 100 million record sales.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
We can start nowhere but. And then there'll be some people, Matt, who think of Ozzy Osbourne as a meme going, Sharon!
That's right. Yeah. They kind of reinvented themselves at the Osbournes TV show, didn't they?
Yeah.
And I read recently that Sharon Osbourne is quite keen. And she, I mean, never shy at self-publicity. But she's suggesting that there's a biopic made of that era in the 90s and 2000s where they did the Osbournes. I don't think the world needs a biopic Sharon and Ozzy Osbourne. But incredible. And you think he was fired by Black Sabbath. It's strange because he was fired from Black Sabbath, and then Black Sabbath's career went, after Dio left, down.
Yeah.
And Ozzy's been on a sort of upward trajectory ever since. Yeah. Huge in the US. 100 million odd albums sold. Just an amazing person. And, of course, would always be famous for biting the head off a dove in the CBS offices in about 1982, 3. I remember that. Remember that in Sounds. They had the pictures of the kind of the dove, and then the dove without a head and blood everywhere. It was pretty gross to look at. But obviously, he kind of dined out on that, not literally, for many years. Yes, the godfather of metal. Or the Prince of Darkness, whatever way you're going to look at him. But the iconic Ozzy Osbourne.
The double O.
No better places. The double O, indeed. Sharon! So, where should we go next, Bri?
I thought that was it, Matt.
No. There are a few other O's in no particular order. I'm going to bring forward the Osmonds.
Okay.
Now, only because I think they were closet rockers. Back in the day, early 70s, and that was typified by the magnificent Crazy Horses, which has been covered by many, many people over the years, which I think is in itself a killer rock song. So I'm going to put forward the Osmonds for Crazy Horses. We'll stick that on the playlist. That's a great tune. Wait, what you got next, Brian?
Oh, goodness. Somebody who, if we can talk about, I seem to be the purveyor of prog. This episode, somebody who was probably new age music kicked it all off in the early 70s, and probably the reason why Richard Branson is the rich man that he is today is Mr. Mike Oldfield. Yes. You know, amazing album, which is Tubular Bells. You know, the fact that a 20-year-old kid plays all of the instruments and sells the just makes that album, which is, you know, famously was in The Exorcist. That's right. You know, and I always remember when you listen to the building up of the, you know, the track, side one of Tubular Bells. It's two songs, side one and side two. And you had Vivian Stanchel was the master of ceremonies, and he introduces all of the instruments as they start to build up the piece. And famously, Vivian Stanchel was the leader of the Bonzo Dog Doodah Band.
That's right.
That when you've had a few beers.
Absolutely. You're right. Incredible to think he was 19. Was it 1920 when it was released? And it's sold 15 million plus copies around the world. Just staggering. And as you say, a brilliant, brilliant piece of work. An iconic album cover, of course, for Tubular Bells. I remember it when I was young in the 70s, it would be there front and centre in the Woolworths music aisle.
Absolutely,
Just incredible. And well, it's going to be difficult. We'll put some Mike Oldfield, but maybe we'll put some other Mike Oldfield songs on as well.
Was that Maggie Riley?
I don't know, actually.
1983. Moonlight Shadow, that was it. I remember the single.
Yes. Well, yeah, we'll put that on. Other notable O's. I'm going to throw in the O2 in London. Originally the Millennium Dome, I think it was called. I remember going there in about 1999, 2000. But in the last 20-odd years, it's been the O2, a huge concert venue. And I'm only mentioning it because Led Zeppelin, of course, played their famous 2007 reunion gig. Yes, we're still getting over the fact we didn't get tickets for that. But you can still see it on DVD and so on. It's a fantastic show, recorded at the O2 in London, of course. Huge venue. You've been there, haven't you, a few times, Brian?
Twice.
Well, yeah, it's also.
I saw Prince.
Oh, okay.
I saw Prince there, and I've seen John Mayer there. I think that's the only times I've been to the O2. I've not seen. Oh, no, that's the only times I've been.
Of course, quite often the only date on a UK tour for many, many bands. The good old O2 in London. So it's a good venue. I like it. I've always liked it. Not everyone's cup of tea, but I quite like it.
Yeah.
It's a good venue. I saw the Stones there. I've seen Guns N' Roses there and many, many bands. Ariana Grande, Taylor Swift, One Direction. I've seen there. It's true.
That's for your other podcast. That's for
indeed
for those about to take your children to gigs.
Yeah, that's right. That was my.
Cost me a fortune.
Right. I know, but you know, brownie points forever.
Yeah. Staying in London, notable mention is for a band that you know I would have put into this. Oh, band called The Outfield, who I love. The Outfield. Again, had great success in the mid-80s. They will be remembered for their hit song, Your Love. Three-piece band, John Spinks, Tony Lewis, Alan Jackman. Sadly, John and Tony are no longer with us. Great, great band. Toured in America with the likes of Starship and Survivor. Their debut album, Play Deep, is just amazing. And I think I've either put it on as a hidden gem in the past. So enough said on The Outfield. Fabulous band.
Yep, very good, very good. I'm going to mention the Brothers Osborne as well. Good shout. Our old friend Kelvin came up with them, reminded me what a good band they are. Put a few of their songs on. The Brothers Osborne, two brothers, of course, TJ and John, and been going for about 20 years now, I think. Great tunes, Ain't My Fault, and Shoot Me Straight, Burning Man, and so on. Got that real kind of commercial country rock vibe about them. So you'll put some songs from the Brothers Osborne on the playlist, of course. The Offspring, going from country to kind of punky rock.
Yeah.
They were huge. They still are pretty big, aren't
new
they?
New album coming out. Yeah, they've got a new album coming out. Still going strong.
Everyone remembers, of course, their huge hit, which I think was based on you, Bri, wasn't it? Pretty Fly for a White Guy. So it's like almost your theme tune.
I thought you were going to come up with a song with you're a pretty average guitarist, but not that good. I'm trying to think of a song with the name of that.
Yes, well, your guitar gently weeps in the corner, I think, Bri. Well, we'll check it out. Want You Bad is a killer song. I used to do that in a band. It's a really tough song to sing, I can tell you. I don't think I ever nailed it particularly well, but we'll stick some Offspring on the playlist. One thing I did notice, Bri, mm-hmm. as we move on to songs and albums, the amount of songs, and we won't list them, but we'll put loads of them on the playlist, amount of songs that begin with out in the fields, out in the street, and so on.
Yeah.
A amount of songs that are called One, either U2 or Metallica, and begin with the word one of these nights or whatever. And songs and albums that begin with On the Run and On the Level by Quo and so on. But yeah, I'll put a bunch of O's on the playlist. You had some albums, I think.
Right. I had, yes. I had a couple of albums to shout out on. We had obviously the classic One Night in Budokan from MSG, which is fabulous.
That's
album.
That's a killer album.
It is a killer album. It's, you know, obviously it's not going to be the greatest live album of all time because we know what that is.
No, indeed, yeah. Stranger than the Night by UFO. Michael Schenker played on both, of course.
I can't believe
Paul Raymond.
I can't believe you're saying that so close to St. Patrick's Day, young man. Other albums, we have a great acoustic album, which is Warts and All from Francis Dunnery, where it's One Night in Socky Hall Street, and it's just him, an acoustic guitar, and a kettle, and a cup of tea.
Oh, nice.
It's fabulous. Francis Dunnery could have been a comedian in another life. He's such a funny guy. Operation Mindcrime from Queensryche, one of the great albums of the 1980s. And Out of This World, which was Europe's follow-up to The Final Countdown, which is my personal favourite of Europe. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to mention a couple of albums, if I may, Bri.
Yep.
A couple of notable mentions. OK Computer by Radiohead. Love that album. It's a bit of a Marmite album, but it's an excuse to stick a load of songs from OK Computer on there. October by U2. That's a great album.
Great album.
Second album they did. Got some good songs on there. One Day Remains, the first album by Alter Bridge, which is a good song. Talking of comedy, you were touched upon with Francis Dunnery. Ogden's Nut Gone Flake by The Small Faces is an absolutely brilliant album. It's so British, it hurts if you listen to it. It's got Stanley Unwin, the famous, how would you put Stanley Unwin? He was kind of a comedian who invented his own language. You'll know it when you hear it.
It was surrealism, wasn't it? Surrealist comedy. With his own language.
Indeed. But it basically kind of MCs the second side of the album, which is a concept side. It's a cracking album. Motorhead, a couple of shout outs for Overkill. That's a killer album from 1979. And Orgasmatron, which is a great song and a great album. Any other, Bri? Any other O's?
No. We did all right.
Covered it.
Yeah,
we did it. All right, we mentioned On the Level by Quo. Yeah, we'll stick a load of songs on the playlist. I'm looking forward to this playlist, as I always do, because I get the opportunity to pick all my favourite songs. Right. So, Bri, that brings us to
Hidden Gingers.
Thanks, Lola. Sounding great as always. What you got for us, Bri?
So, Matt, for this episode being so close to St. Patrick's Day, I was trying to think of chucking in an Irish artist of sorts, but try to stay away from the obvious, you know, offshoots of Thin Lizzy and...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and Gary Moore and all this kind of stuff. And I came to an artist who recently...
Vivian Campbell.
No, it's not. Vivian Campbell. No! But we haven't mentioned Sir Vivian for a while.
No. We're going to do a complete episode about him when we get to letter V.
Oh, are we?
I've decided.
We should maybe just get him on as a guest and do, we could just do, Vivian, we're an episode, you are the V in the classic rock, and we get him do, you know, best album. Anyway, that's for another show.
Yes.
An equally dexterous and versatile guitarist is a young man called Dom Martin from Belfast. Dom released his first album in 2019. He can equally play acoustic guitar and electric guitar very well. For a lot of people, he is seen as there's always the next Rory Gallagher. But I've listened to Dom quite a lot, and he's fantastic. He's got that lovely sensibility as a guitar player, and he's a good singer as well too. So my hidden gem is actually his latest album, Matt, which is called Buried in the Heel, released last year. Maybe for those of us who get Classic Rock magazine might go, he actually did get blues album of the month in Classic Rock magazine way back last year. But okay. When I was listening to it and thinking about artists, Dom's fantastic guitar player. And if you get a chance to see any of his interviews, he's just done a fabulous interview on Anderton's TV, the music shop. And he just talks about all his gear, but he talks more importantly about his life, his working in the music industry. And although he's on the blues circuit now, he still likes to go back home to Belfast and try and help in the local area about promoting music, helping young bands. So he puts in to give back to the local musicians community. So my hidden gem is Dom Martin, Buried in the Heel. Please listen to it. You might be surprised how good it is. What about you, mate?
Very good. Well, thank you. Yes, well, I am going to... Do you remember before Christmas I went to see... Geddy Lee in London, Lee from Rush, doing his My Effing Life tour.
Yes.
Well, CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company, I think that's what it stands for, have got a they filmed an episode called for their live at Massey Hall. Massey Hall is a concert hall in Toronto where Rush played many times. And this is basically his conversation with Alex Lifeson. That took place in Toronto back in December of last year, and it is absolutely brilliant. It's hilarious. It's fascinating. It's emotional. It's just great, and it's because it's two old friends chatting basically with an audience. And in some respects, the audience doesn't even need to be there. But absolutely brilliant. Alex Lifeson and Geddy Lee from Rush just chatting. So that's it. Straight and simple. I found it on YouTube last weekend. Watched it, and it is just fantastic. And it's just it's just, as I say, two old friends chatting about all things Rush and all things late to Neil Peart and just their various kind of recollections. But yeah, check it out. Geddy Lee live at Massey Hall, chatting to his old friend Alex Lighton. That's it. Short and sweet, Brian. That was it.
Yeah,
we're done. Another episode. Thank God. Letter O is done. Got through it.
We need to do a double episode for P.
Oh, we might have to actually. Yeah, we could do that. Might need to. An S. Sure about X. We might have to struggle with that one, but we'll come to that in due course. But for now, thanks everyone for listening. We really appreciate it. Please subscribe on YouTube. Find us on Instagram. Find us on Facebook, of course. Please come and say hello. Welcome to some new listeners. I know we've got new listeners in Mexico, in the US. In the UK, so please come and say hello on Facebook or Instagram or wherever, or don't, it's up to you. We're fine either way. But so thanks for listening. Be good to each other. Take care of yourself. Brian, anything to say?
Yeah.
It's your mum's birthday. Is it your mum's birthday soon?
Yes, it's my mum and my aunt's birthday. I'll be going back home to Ireland very, very soon to see them to see them all. You will catch us as usual on Scotland Rocks Radio every third Tuesday. Yes, and I'll see you next time, Matt.
Yeah, look forward to it. Take care of yourself.
All right. See you, mate.
Bye for now.
Bye for now.
Does Matt Pod, we salute you, is a Mainly Rogers production.